Hello and welcome to episode 42 of The Offline Gamer. I'm Matt.
And I'm Ray.
And we're 4 years old.
Yay! Does that mean we get to go to nursery school now?
I mean, yeah, if you want.
Yeah.
But yes, 4 years ago, we decided to do a podcast.
Yep.
Lost my train of thought.
It's pretty much a summary of the last 4 years.
Yeah, more than likely. So, what have we been up to since last episode then? I've been doing a few bits and bobs, were you?
Whether or not anybody can tell, I've been a bit ill.
Yeah.
So, I'm maybe a bit sniffly and gruff on today's episode. What else have I been doing? Not necessarily very much in the gaming sphere. The new League of Path of Exile started. I didn't start playing at the first possible moment because I had a fairly busy weekend that weekend.
Unlike, I assume, Chris, who was right there.
No.
Was he not?
No.
Wow.
He wasn't going to play because he wasn't that interested in it. But then our other friend, Paul, was playing and saying how much fun it was. And then by the Monday, the league usually starts on a Friday. And by the Monday, he was like, oh, go on, then I'll play. And then I was like, yeah, I've got nothing else to do. I'll play some Path of Exile. And then I had 3 days off work. The first day, the Monday, I had to have two fillings redone. The second day, I had to go to the dentist. And then the third day, I got ill. So it was 3 days of meh.
Lovely.
So I played some Path of Exile. And some of the buffs that they've done to the Necromancer, which happens to be what I'm playing, are insane. And this is probably the most ridiculously overpowered build I've ever done. But it's still fun.
Okay.
Other than that, before the Path of Exile League came out, there was a little game called Undermine, which went into early access. It was either the very last week of August or the first week of September. They themselves describe it as Binding of Isaac meets Rogue Legacy. Two games which we have definitely talked about.
Yep.
So it's a rogue-like and a rogue-lite. And the idea is you are peasants who go down into a mine and you've got to bash around through the mine to... You've got to rescue vendors, for example, and you've got to beat the various levels, presumably to get through to some super big boss at the end and find out what's going on and why there's earthquakes happening. And I did a bit of streaming of it and I am terrible at it. So yeah, despite playing, I don't know how many peasants, I cannot beat the first boss. So there's three levels to the first section of mine, and I can't beat the first boss. So I got a bit fed up. In a similar rogue, I can't remember which one's a roguelike and which one's a roguelite, but whatever. In a similar vein, Enter the Gungeon came on sale. And I thought, oh, I'll grab it, whatever. And that's quite fun as well. But yeah, as I say, then Path of Exile came up and I've been a bit ill, so I don't like necessarily sitting at the computer for ages.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise it's just sort of work and stuff.
Yeah.
Usual.
Eat, sleep,
yeah.
Work.
Yeah, watch TV. Started watching loads of true crime documentaries on Netflix. Don't know why. Just fancied it.
Well, I went through a phase last year of watching lots of Gordon Ramsay shows for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just get in these little moods where you've got an itch you need to scratch.
Yeah. Like I watched, I watched the Confession Tapes, Ted Bundy. And I was like, I didn't know any of this stuff about Ted Bundy. Yeah, I don't know why I've just suddenly got into true crimey things, but yeah. Those are some of the things I've been up to. And I also randomly had a burst of reading frenzy, so I've read about 4 books in 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, okay.
So I'm well ahead of my book challenge goal for Goodreads, which is good because I'm probably going to start reading lots of little things now instead of full-length books for uni,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast last time.
I don't know if you have.
I'm going to do a part-time master's, everybody. At the same time as full-time work. Yay.
You very, very strange person.
Glutton for punishment. it's something to keep your brain working, isn't it?
Mm.
So, yeah, that will involve lots of little bits of reading. So, like, a chapter here and a chapter there or an article or whatever, as opposed to sitting down and reading solid books. I'm sure I will still read solid books. But, yeah, that is what I have been up to.
Okay.
I think your list is a bit longer. A few more games.
I have done a lot of gaming.
Yeah.
Board gaming especially.
Yeah.
I'm having regular game nights with Karen now, mm-hmm. so we're getting through a lot of games. And
yeah.
Some games that I've played.
Yep.
And some games that I haven't. So I've got a good mix of old and new stuff to talk about, which is quite nice. Before we get onto that, let's talk about The Great Indoors. That was last weekend, as of recording. You were hoping to come along, but unfortunately, because you were ill, you couldn't make it. A smaller event this year because it was mainly about the open gaming, but we got some good games in, and it was nice to see Pete again. And we've got an interview with Pete coming up later in the episode where he talks about not only Great Indoors, but also his company that he set up, Board Game Hub.
Yep.
And also the game that he's publishing as well, mm-hmm. called Tranquility. And we also have an interview with James, the designer of that game. So look forward to that a bit later. And then the other thing is I went to see Vince at Asgard Games in Warsaw.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast, but he's moving premises to a nice new one around the corner. I don't know. I mean, most people listening to this won't know Warsaw Town Centre, I would imagine.
Probably.
But there is a new retail area that's been built. And he's got this massive, massive one.
Mm.
And it's going to have a cafe and a board game shop and room for tournaments.
Mm.
So it's going to be an awesome shop.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see it. And he's hoping to get that done in the next couple of months. So,
super.
Yeah, new Asgard, as it is to be called, will be opening in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So we will keep people updated with that.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we'll get another chat with Vince, because last time Vince was on the podcast, was it at the Great Indoors last year we had a chat with him? It was, wasn't it? We had that little room. Because we chatted to him, Richard, and Pete. Didn't
we? So. And this time last year he was maybe thinking of going to America.
He was, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of things have changed for him in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
I think he's very excited about
New Asgard.
New Asgard, as am I. Next up, I finally, after 6 years, joined the current generation of consoles.
I mean, I wasn't exactly... I only got the PS4 secondhand.
Yeah.
What, a year ago?
Yeah, I treated myself to a secondhand Xbox One S for Music Magpie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is...
For your birthday.
For my birthday, yeah. And, I have Game Pass with it, so I've got lots of games. But I've also got lots of the games with gold, because I did have gold for a while when I had my 360.
Yeah.
So I've got lots of old games I can play with that as well. But I've also been scaring CEX for lots of cheap secondhand games as well, so...
As if you need more games
I know,
put on the list with how many are on the pass.
A lot of them I've got are, a lot of the ones I've got are two-player games.
Oh, okay.
Or multiplayer, so you can, if you've got someone around, you can sit on the couch and play together or whatever.
Okay.
That's mainly what I like consoles for. But there's a few. I mean, like, I've got Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
Because I like to play that on console rather than on PC. Final Fantasy games I've generally played. Well, the last few. 7 I had on PC. And 8, but then 9, 10, 13, 15, I've played on console, so.
Cool.
And I played Slay the Spire, which you talked about as well.
Yeah.
Which was a cool little card game where you're ascending up a spire, killing enemies and building your deck as you go and getting new cards and upgrades and things like that. So I enjoyed that as well.
See, I told you it was good.
Yeah. For my birthday from Karen, I got a book called Journal 29. Now, this is a puzzle book.
Ooh.
And it is very interesting and very good. In fact, so good, we've completed the first one and I've bought the second one.
Okay.
So it's 60-odd pages. And basically on each page you've got on the left-hand side is a QR code and a web address and a space for you to write a key. And what you do is you solve the puzzle on the right-hand page, go to the website, type in the answer, and it gives you a key. And then those keys that you're collecting from the answers, you'll need to help you solve puzzles further on in the game. And there's puzzles which have like numerical answers or ones that have like cryptic word puzzles that you have to solve and things like that. None of them are, I mean, there's a few that are quite unobvious. And luckily there's a hint for them. So you can see where people have gone, I've got no idea what to do here. Where do I start? And some people will say, oh, just look at this in a slightly different way without giving you the answer, which just points you in the right direction. But I think if you like puzzles, it's really good. And the story's interesting as well. There's a story that goes through the game. So we've bought the second one, which just picks up where the first book has left off. So, yeah, Journal 29, I definitely recommend that.
Sounds fun.
As far as board games go, I've played, as I say, quite a few. Some with Karen, some with other people. So first up, no surprise, one of the first games I decided to play with her when we said we were going to have regular game nights was one of my favourites, Fire of Eidolon. Which I've mentioned countless times on this podcast. But luckily she liked it as well, so that's good.
That's good.
And we successfully rescued the fire, so that was
good. Good,
yep. Dale of Merchants 1 and 2, again, no surprise. It must be said that most of the competitive games I'm going to mention, she's beat me at. So I've just thought I'd mention that up front. So you played Dale of Merchants 1 and 2. We played one first, and then a few days later we played the second one. And it was a good illustration to me of how the decks that you play the game with really do affect the strategy and the overall feel of the game. More of the decks in the second one have a lot more player interaction. Whereas when we played the first one together, it was basically we were just building our own market stalls and not really paying attention to what the other player was doing. But then with the two, with some of the decks from two, there's a lot more like stealing players, stealing cards from other players and things like that. But yeah, a really enjoyable deck builder, and I can't wait for the Dale of Merchants collection to arrive. And so I've got one big box to store everything in.
Which will probably live in your car.
No, we had a good tidy up last weekend. She actually came around and helped me organise my games. And she was very excited about the fact that, because she works in the library, so she does cataloguing and things like that. So she was very excited to help me catalogue my board games. Constellations is next. So this is a game that I probably mentioned once when I had it arrive on Kickstarter, but it's basically a drafting game. There's like a marketplace on the table, and you are drafting cards that have different types of star on them. And then you are using those stars in your hand to purchase constellations and place them in your little play area. And then at the end of the game, you gain points based on how many matching constellations you have. They have little symbols around the outside. So if you have them matching up, you get more points and things like that. So you were, you're basically building the night sky, but not the real night sky, because you're just putting random constellations next to each other. But you're trying to put them together in a way that earns you the most points. So a fun little game, not particularly deep, but interesting. And there's a lot of information about the constellations and the stars and things in the box as well. So there's a bit of educational aspect to it as well, which is nice. Hardback was next, which is the sequel to Paperback, which is the word building card game.
I imagine Karen would be a fan of this sort of paperback and hard thingy.
So yeah, I thought that would be a good one to introduce her to, because she's familiar with the deck building element from Dale of Merchants. And then you've got the whole thing about having to draft cards that help you make words. And then the cards you can use as different, you can either use them as the words, but also when you play a word, the cards have all got either point values or monetary values on them. So you use the money to buy more cards. And then, you played to 60 points, and then the person who's got 60 points, everyone gets another round, and then whoever's got the most points at the end is the winner. Next up was a game that we played at UKG last year, which was Witless Wizards. And again, this is a game where you've got different decks and you can choose to put them in. So you've got like a sci-fi wizard deck and a druid deck and things like that.
Pirates,
yeah. So you choose which ones you want to play in the game, mix them all together, and then you are drawing cards that give you either equipment to help you cast more powerful spells or to protect you against the spells that your opponent is casting you. And yeah, it's just a simple little battle game where you're just trying to be the last wizard standing.
Yeah.
Again, nothing particularly deep, but good, enjoyable fun. So we played that. And again, I think I lost that one as well.
Hmm.
Carnival Koala is next. This is a game I haven't talked about for ages. The last time I remember playing this was probably 3 or 4 years ago. So near the start of our podcasting career. It was a game I backed very early on in my Kickstarter life. So this is a nice, fun little game where you are basically forming a tribe of koalas and using them to hunt animals that you're cooking for food for your koala king.
Mm-hmm.
So each player has a koala king that has a special ability. And then you're rolling dice that allow you to hunt or claim koalas or use your king's special ability.
Yeah.
And then once you've got the right combination of koalas and things, then you can hunt for a animal. And you've got... The animals are interesting. There is like mixes of different types of animals. So you know how in Beasts of Balance where you combine two together?
Yeah.
It's like that.
Oh, okay.
So the ones in the book are like the cat eagle.
Oh, okay.
Which is a cannon eagle.
Yeah.
Or the tuna toad, which is a fish and a toad.
Mm.
Or the Komodo cow.
Okay.
So, yeah. Fun art, nice and simple game, and the dice rolling mechanic is one of those things that a lot of games use. You know, when you've got to roll 5 or 6 dice, and then you decide which ones you want to keep, and then you can re-roll the other ones a few times if you want to try and get a better selection of cards.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Carnival Koala. I think last time I spoke about this must have been back in 2016 or something. So
something like that, yeah.
Good to come back to it again. And I still enjoyed it. It's interesting for me to go back to some of these older games that I enjoyed to see, did I enjoy this game because it was new?
Yeah.
Or do I now enjoy it because it's actually a good, well-designed game? And so far, all the ones I've gone back to, I'm enjoying because they are good, well-designed games. And then this week, I played Star Trek Flux. Well, Star Trek The Next Generation Flux, actually, to be more precise.
Okay.
Which shouldn't need much explanation. It's just Flux with Star Trek characters. But if you're a fan of Star Trek Next Generation, the goals are all based around episodes or events that happen.
Yeah.
So, for example, there's one where you have to get Commander Riker and a malfunctioning transporter, which is based on the episode Second Chances, where Commander Riker gets duplicated in a transporter accident.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that episode? With two Rikers?
Maybe.
I don't think the universe could have coped with two Rikers, but apparently it can.
Yeah, I mean, you could send him to the other universe.
Yeah, maybe.
Whatever it's called.
The mirror universe.
Yeah, the mirror universe.
Yeah.
Where all the baddies are.
The beards.
Yeah.
And then next up, Ninjitsu, which was a game that I backed, I think, last year, which is from Jellybean Games.
Yep.
Which is the second in the Treasure Hunters series after Scuttle.
Yep.
So it's essentially the same type of game. You have to get 21 points in front of you. And you draw a card, play a card, and you can play a card either for its point value or for its ability.
Yep.
But you can also, in this version, I can't remember if you could do this in Scuttle, I don't think you could. You can place a card in front of you face down as a trap card. And when it's face down in front of you, it's still worth the same number of points.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how much it's worth, but no one else does. But other players can steal them from you.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the cards are bad. So it says, like, if you steal this, then you have to do, and it's a bad card, then you have to do this.
Yeah.
So sometimes you could play a good card that face down in front of you, and sometimes it could be a bad card, and then hope that someone steals it from you. So. Mm-hmm. And zombies is coming soon, hopefully. Or brains, sorry, the zombie version.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to mixing all of those games together. And
zombies, ninjas, and pirates.
Yeah, all in one.
Yeah.
Big, massive brawl.
Yeah.
So that should be fun. And last of all, the other day we played Line. the skateboarding game.
Oh, yes.
Which we haven't played. Well, I haven't played since we bought it at UKG last year.
Yeah.
And again, that's still good fun. Yeah. You have your line of, you reveal a line of skateboarding obstacles across the middle of the table. And then everyone drafts cards. And then you have to match up. Every obstacle has a different type, but colour, red, green, or blue.
Yeah.
And you have to match a skateboarding move to it, but it also has to match up with one of the symbols on the previous card that you played. Yeah. And you have to try and make a chain, or the longest chain you can, of different moves.
To use skateboarding terms, a line.
A line. That's a line where of the tricks. Name. That's where the. Yeah. Yes, tricks. That's the
tricks,
thing.
Tricks, not moves.
Tricks, not moves. Well done. Thank you, Ray. It's good job you're here.
Yeah. I can't skateboard. I just have absorbed a lot of jargon from Chris over the years.
Yeah. So that's what I've been playing, and I've been buying a few bits and bobs, but there's a big car boot sale near me every Sunday morning, so I've been going to that recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember if I said a few weeks ago I found two games. I found One Night Ultimate Werewolf and Lost Cities. Mm-hmm. I think I got those for like 50p each.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember if it was at that car boot sale or a different one. I picked up a copy of Weird Things Humans Search For.
Yeah.
From Big Potato Games. Yep. Which is one of those little party games where it's like you say the first part of a sentence and then everyone else has to try and guess what the thing that people Googled for. And I was at a car boot sale with Karen, and she picked up a copy of Obama Llama, also from Big Potato Games. Yeah. So apparently, if you want a Big Potato game, you go to a car boot sale, because that's where people seem to be selling them.
I went to a car boot sale yesterday, and I think the closest thing there was to anything was a rather classic Scrabble set.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. I see a lot of, you see the same kind of things you see at charity shops as well. You get like lots of puzzles and
weird kids games.
Yeah,
that are kind of just crappy.
Yeah. I mean, not even the good ones like Buckaroo or something like that.
Yeah.
Just really odd ones.
Just like random branded stuff from some weird TV show. And oh my goodness, so many Bratz dolls.
Yes.
And they're disturbing.
And Beanie Babies as well. I've noticed a lot of those.
I didn't see any Beanie Babies. There was one store that had hundreds of like Marvel figurines and then loads of different other kinds of figurines. So I think they had like Adventure Time figurines, Marvel figurines, Lego figurines. And they had three huge binders full of old classic Pokemon cards. I think that was the store we spent the most time at.
Yeah.
The only thing we bought was, Chris bought a book about an artist from yesteryear, and I've forgotten what his name was. So basically a book about a painter. And some mini donuts.
Yay.
And a coffee.
Nice.
That's about it.
Fair enough.
I think there were a couple of people who were selling some stuff that looked kind of fun but wasn't really, like random garden stuff. But some of it looked seriously rusty.
Yeah.
And a lot of it distinctly looked like it came off the back of a truck.
Yes, there's a lot of that.
In the not so much falling off of it as being taken off of it sort of way. So we quickly moved on.
Yeah.
But so many children at car boot sales.
It's weird, isn't it? I've noticed that.
And so not just so many children, but so many booters, as they call themselves, just selling like kids' clothes and women's clothes, and they were all terrible. And I was like, this is a lot of wasted space on kids' clothes.
Yeah.
Like, and random old
tat.
And I'm just like, but why? None of this stuff is any good.
One man's tat is another man's treasure.
True, but there was a huge field, and like a good 60% of it was kids' stuff. And that, like, seemingly every other person had brought their child with them, which made it rather difficult to get around, because the kids were just running around, not caring who they bumped into. Everybody's looking at the booths and the well, the stands or whatever, and not looking where they're pushing their pram.
Yeah.
And I was a bit ill that day, so I just, by about halfway around, I was like, oh, why do humans exist? So, yes, I got a bit tired, but, yeah, they've stopped doing, the one that we went to is in Studley, and last weekend was their last one of the season.
Okay.
I never understand, well, obviously, because it's freezing, but...
Yeah.
I can never tell, like, I'm not into the car boot scene enough to know when it starts and stops.
No, I mean, the one by me is Essington, which is massive compared... I mean, I've been to a couple over the summer, and it's by far the biggest one.
Yeah.
And I did think they run from, like, usually, like, June to the end of September.
Yeah.
So during the summer, basically. Mm. But I don't know. I mean, like I say, I'm not a big one on the car boot scene, so... Okay. Let's leave car boots then and mosey on over to Kickstarter Corner. What have we backed? Well, I've backed three things this month. You haven't backed anything, have you?
Well, I've backed some things.
Oh, but not games.
They're not relevant to games.
Yes. Lots of gaming. Enamel pins.
Yeah. I backed a couple of Kickstarters for some enamel pins of cute, fluffy... one is kittens and one's just random, cute, fluffy animals.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well...
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I backed this month was something we've talked about on the show in the past, and we've actually interviewed the creator a couple of times as well, and that's Solar Storm from Dranda Games, the cooperative game where you are trying to repair a spaceship before you can evacuate it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to know more about that, then listen to some of our previous episodes where we've been at the Board Game Bash in Birmingham, because those are the ones where we've interviewed Aidan and at one of those events. And the campaign is going really, really well.
Yeah.
They've smashed their funding target. They're quickly ticking off various stretch goals that they've put down. So I'm really happy because really nice guys at Dranda, and I'm really glad that they've done so well. Next up, this is something I've talked about a couple of times in the past. And if I bring up the Kickstarter app on my iPad, I will be able to tell you how many times I've backed it in the past. Because it's eDice. The electronic dice. And it's
returning again.
Yeah, so let me look at my list of things I've backed. And let's see when. Let's count how many times I've backed this project. Because for one reason or another, every time it comes up on Kickstarter, it's been cancelled.
Yeah.
This is actually the second time I've backed it this month.
Hmm.
Because the first time they put it on Kickstarter, they did a competition where a random backer would get an upgrade. And Kickstarter said, you can't do that. It's against our rules. So they cancelled the campaign and they had to relaunch it.
Oops.
So let me scroll down this massive list of things I've backed in the past. There's a lot. There is a heck of a lot. Right. Ah, this is the unsuccessful and cancelled part at the bottom. So what we got here? Yes, it was originally called UDice.
Yeah.
So the first time I backed it was UDice 2. Then they relaunched as GameMate. So I backed it again then. And actually when it was... So the UDice one, it was at 81% funded.
Mm.
The GameMate one got to 188% funded and then was cancelled. And then eDice got to 216%, but then was cancelled by Kickstarter. So this is the fourth time I backed it. So fingers crossed, this time I might actually
get it.
Yeah, let's see where they are on the funding for this particular iteration of their campaign. Mm. 160% with 12 days remaining. So let's see, shall we?
Mm.
But I mean, I do like it. Especially now I'm playing D&D, I think it actually would be very good for that because you can program different dice combinations. So if I'm casting a specific spell, I can just bring that combination of dice up and just without having to sort through the dice. And it means I've only got to carry one little dice around with me as opposed to... I mean, there's something about rolling a real dice, isn't there?
Yeah.
But there's also something cool about little tech gizmos like this. So... I'll back it now, so will I use it or not? I don't know, but it's fun. And then the last game I've backed this month is a game from someone I've backed, I think, two games from before, and that's Triple Ace Games. Now, this we wanted to look at the expo, but we couldn't because every single time we went past their stand to look at this game, it was rammed, wasn't it? And that's Dwarven Beer Fest, a push your luck dice and card game where you are, I mean, I'm guessing, let's just confirm that, but I think you are playing dwarves who are in a drinking competition. Yes, the dwarves gather at the tavern. The ale begins to flow and soon a drinking competition ensues. The Dwarven Beer Fest begins and you're all invited. And there's a few reasons I back this. One, it's about, well, it's drink, not food, but close enough. And two, it's from Triple Ace, and the games from them that I've backed before and have had arrived have all been really, really good. So I'm just trying to think. There was Cadaver, wasn't there? That was one of theirs. Imps, that was one of theirs. Devilish Jewels. And what was the other one? Oh, it was Halfling Feast, the ones where you have there's an eating competition between halflings. So that one's about an eating competition. This one's a drinking competition. But mechanically, they appear to be very different. So we'll see how that goes. But good luck to them. They are about 60% funded with 16 days to go. So well on the way for a successful campaign there. So that's what I've backed. And what's arrived? Well, watch out for these videos because they'll be coming to YouTube soon because this afternoon we've just done them all. So first up, Bargain Quest, which is a fun little game where you are playing a shopkeeper in a fantasy world.
Yep.
And you are putting wares in your shop. And some wares you put in the window to try and attract people to your shop. And other wares you're selling to adventurers, and then those adventurers go out and complete quests and things. Why the adventurers can't buy things in the window, I don't know.
It's because then you wouldn't be able to attract people anymore, I suppose.
I suppose, yeah. Or maybe you could sell someone, but to them, there'd be a disadvantage. We haven't read the rules yet, so I'm not quite sure. But yeah, I'm looking forward to playing that. It looks nice.
Super.
Battle of the Bards, where this is lots of anthropomorphic animals, isn't it? So, yeah. And I like that. I like animals doing human things.
Yep.
Because they're cute.
Yeah.
From what I can tell when we unboxed it, we are playing bards who are skilled in various disciplines, illusion, singing, dancing, and instrument playing was the...
Yes.
And there are audiences that you have to satisfy, and the audiences like different things.
Yeah.
And you're just earning points by pleasing the audiences, and the more points the audience is worth, the more difficult they are to satisfy, shall we say. Gloom of Thrones, which should not need much of an explanation. It's gloom, but inspired by Game of Thrones in a sort of comedy way.
Parody.
We've talked through some of the characters when we looked at the Kickstarter, didn't we? And that wasn't that long ago, actually. That's been a very fast turnaround.
Yeah.
I think it was only 2 or 3 months ago that I backed it, and it's arrived already. Mm. So. And then lastly, not a quick turnaround. This one's been in the works for a while, but it's the board game version of Warehouse 13, the science fiction sort of fantasy TV show about a warehouse where magical artifacts are stored, based on things that happen in real life, like to famous people. So I'm just trying to think of something. Who was the mirror? Lewis Carroll's mirror, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So things like that. And the point of the game is that there is a traitor amongst you, and one of you has to work to stop the other players from completing objectives. And there's a win condition for the agents, or there's a win condition for the traitor.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of Warehouse 13, but when we took the box and opened it, it was like estimated time to play. Was it 130 minutes?
Yeah.
So over 2 hours. So it's not often I play a game that's that long. Most of the games I play tend to be 45 minutes, an hour and a half at the absolute max.
Yeah.
So a 2 hour game. We'll see how it goes.
Plus you'll have to learn how it plays first.
Yeah.
So that'll take at least another, I don't know, half an hour.
Yeah. But the theme draws me in because I like the show. And the cards and the art is all pictures of the actors or scenes from the show and things like that. So it looks like thematically they've got everything down well. So I'm looking forward to giving that a go.
Super duper. The only thing that I've had arrived that is sort of game adjacent, I suppose, is the Seb McKinnon art, which I backed beginning of this year.
Is this the one that does stuff for Magic?
Yes.
Okay.
This is also Chris's first and probably only Kickstarter that he ever backed.
Okay, so it wasn't you. This was actually him who backed this.
No, he backed it and then I backed it.
Oh, right, okay.
I backed it for art because I thought he had backed it for a game mat. So I was going to get two art prints and give one to him. But then it turned out he backed it for an art print as well. So now we've got three. And I bought him a print by Seb McKinnon for his birthday. So now we've got four. And, yeah, Chris's one arrived, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago. And mine arrived yesterday. So I think they were probably going down in backer order because Chris backed before me and he got his reward before me, even though we were at the same address.
That's weird.
So, yeah, he backed for the art for Vengeful Rebirth, and then I got the art for the card Deathsprout, and a collaboration that he did with another magic artist called Nils Ham that he did just for this Kickstarter. And they arrived yesterday. They took a little bit longer than expected to arrive because they first started sending out art prints really early, as opposed to people who backed for art plus a card mat, because the mats were taking longer. And then they had to stop because people who got their art in the first wave, it was getting there damaged. So they had to find some better packaging. And yeah, the one thing that I thought was a bit peculiar was, obviously I said I bought a print of his from his like web shop, outside of the Kickstarter. When that arrived, I ended up having to pay about 13 quid in fees.
That's weird.
Probably like, I don't know, whatever it was, £4 of customs charges and then £8 for the Royal Mail to
charge me for the charges. Yeah.
But then when it came through the Kickstarter, even though it was coming from the same web store that he always uses, there were no customs charges.
That's weird. Maybe there's a batch of them sent in at once or something.
I don't know, maybe. But it just seemed a bit bizarre. So I don't know whether somehow the Kickstarter thing forces people to pay the customs. But then I've definitely had things come from America from Kickstarters.
Oh, yeah, same here.
Where I've had to pay customs. Yeah. But that is also one of the reasons I haven't backed very much.
Yeah.
Because I really can't be asked with the customs charges from stuff coming from America anymore.
Okay.
But yes, I had my art show up.
Okay, let's move on to our ones to watch then. So my first one to watch this month. Have you ever fancied running your own board game cafe but can't afford it? Well, maybe you should try Board Game Cafe Frenzy, which is a card game about running a board game cafe.
Ooh.
Let's read the description. In Board Game Cafe Frenzy, players compete to create the most profitable board game cafe by playing their cards. The game is divided into two phases, preparation and store opening. And in order to win, players need to meet customer requirements, pay attention to the strategic positioning of their competitors, and find the right timing in order to make their cafe come out ahead. At the end, the board game cafe that earned the most money wins the game. So yeah, it looks quite interesting. The art is nice. It's by designer Saiti Low, who released his first game last year called A Pleasant Journey to Nico. No.
Not heard of it.
But apparently it's been quite well received. So let's see how the funding's going for this game. It is had a €4,000 goal. And it's currently got 6,300 euros, so it's past its funding goal. And it has over a week left, so That's my first one to watch, Board Game Cafe Frenzy.
Right, my first one to watch is Root, the tabletop role-playing game, which is, funnily enough, a tabletop role-playing game based on the award-winning Root, a game of Woodland, White and Right board game. So Root was a game that was very popular when it came out a couple of years ago. I mean, I think it was last year, but my concept of time is terrible nowadays.
I'll look it up while you talk.
Yeah. So the tabletop role-playing game, I think it's just going to come as a book, is a game of woodland creatures fighting for money, justice, and freedom from powers far greater than them. Based on Root the board game and officially licensed by Lady Games, Root the TTRPG brings the tales of the woodland to your RPG table.
Okay. According to BGG, Root came out in 2018.
Yeah.
And it is overall the 42nd best game on the site.
Yes.
In ranking.
So it was number one for quite a while when it came out. Right, yeah. So in the Root RPG, you play vagabonds, outcasts from the normal society of the woodlands who have come to live in the spaces between, whether that's in the forests themselves or on the fringes of society. You are competent and skilled, and you have to be to survive as a vagabond, and you aren't tied down to any particular place or faction. You might be a badger arbiter, serving many sides in resolving conflicts and defending their interests. You might be a cat scoundrel, sliding on your mask before you sneak out into the darkness to cause mischief, or a wolf ranger at home in the wilds and untamed places of the woodland.
Ooh.
Powered by the Apocalypse system, used by tabletop RPGs such as Apocalypse World, Dungeon World, and many of Magpie Games' own games.
That's not a system I'm familiar with.
No. You'll create a character using one of several vagabond archetypes, and then you'll take action, rolling 2 6-sided dice to resolve the outcomes of desperate situations. It uses the core framework of the system, provides strong, simple ways to tell your own stories of adventure in the woodland. Root creates stories like those you'll find in Redwall, Watership Down, Mouse Guard, The Warriors, and The Guardians of Gahul.
Oh, okay. That sounds fun, then.
Yes. So, I think it's a slightly different way of telling stories in the same world as the tabletop board game, which was very well received. I have noticed quite a lot of RPGs going up on Ye Olde Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I
think they've always been there, but I think we're paying a bit more attention to them there.
Yeah. I've noticed a few that have been things that are based on the world of a pre-existing board game a bit more. So through the Kickstarter, there'll be 2 different books and digital versions of both, as well as deluxe Kickstarter exclusive editions, which the digital ones will be fulfilled by Drive-Thru RPG. So, yes, anyone who backs for at least $20 will get all stretch goals, all the stretch goal digital PDFs, including 4 pre-made digital clearings, 2 additional digital maps, 5 additional digital playbooks, and a digital version of the GM screen. So yeah, there's some physical books, there's even an expansion, there's a core book and an expansion book, there's deluxe books which come in a little box to keep them together, the Vagabond's Satchel, which comes with dice, physical maps, a physical GM screen, and physical equipment cards. So it's $20 if you just want the PDFs of the 2 books, $40 if you want the core book, physical book, and the PDF copies of the 2 books, $75 for both the physical books and both the PDFs. Core book and the satchel is $100. Yeah, you get the idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't pay 75 quid for 2 physical books, but considering how expensive some of the D&D books are,
yeah.
I guess that's kind of on par. But $20 for the PDF sounds fairly good.
Mm-hmm.
It does remind me a little bit of the Humblewood RPG that I got all the PDFs, etc. for a couple of months ago. It's like a woodland RPG and you are either one of the bird folk or one of the other animal folk who lives in the woods. But yeah, obviously this is based on Root itself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's by Magpie Games. It's already massively smashed. So the original goal was $10,000. They are currently on $256,137, and they have 29 days to go.
Wow, okay.
So they have 2,689 backers already. So yeah, Root was very popular, and it looks like the tabletop version is going to be very popular too.
Cool.
The RPG version, yep. So there you go.
My next one is not a game, it's a book. It's The Board Game Book,
ooh.
Volume 2. So, Volume 1 I didn't back on Kickstarter, which I regretted. But I was then having to buy it on Amazon, which we actually did a video. In fact, I can't remember if I put it on YouTube yet. We did a, not an unboxing because it's a book,
yeah.
But sort of like a quick flip through and showing what's in there. And it's basically a book about some of the most popular games of the hobby.
Mm.
Reviews, criticisms, interviews with designers, things like that. So Volume 2 is going to be more of the same, but they're going to be concentrating on the top games of this year and last year.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be a bit more modern things in there. Lovely pictures of the game, stunning photography,
yeah.
Designer interviews, things like that. It's going to be really nice. I'm looking at the reward things and the stretch goals. And there's some interesting ones here. So they said if they earned a certain amount of money, there would be a backer party at next year's UKGE, which would be quite nice. An upgraded cover illustration. If they hit certain amounts of money, they'll be giving more money to the freelance writers,
mm-hmm.
which is nice.
Yep.
So it's a nice... I mean, Volume 1 was a nice, thick, well-printed, well-made book. So I obviously expect Volume 2 to be just the same. So it's going to be 256 pages with over 130,000 words of original games journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from Owen Duffy. And they wanted £12,500. And at the moment, they've more or less doubled that. They've almost got £25,000. So and that's 10 days to go as of recording. And yeah, I have a feeling I may end up backing that. So
yeah, when it popped up on the recommended for you page on Kickstarter, it did throw me because we literally just filmed.
Hmm.
I was sitting there going, hang on.
Now, that one was blue.
Has Matt somehow got this book before it's been what? Hang on. Huh? Hasn't Matt what? As you say, it's the second version and you've got the first version off of Amazon recently.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my second one.
So my next one, I've only got two this time around, is technically game adjacent.
Okay,
I'll
allow it.
It is Prints by Johannes Voss, who also is a artist and illustrator for Magic the Gathering. So he's already hit his target. His target was €10,000. He's got nearly €30,000. So out of the various prints that he's got on there, one signed print is about £15, €18. Two prints, £25. So they're very reasonable. And he's got... he is an illustrator for Magic, but he's also put up some of his art that he does through his Patreon, which is... not art that's officially been adopted by Wizards of the Coast for the game,
yeah.
But that people have wanted to use as like tokens or alternate art for cards that exist. So there's one, for example, called Cat Dragon, which is a rather large fat cat with a green dragon hat on it. And to be honest, it looks like a Stegosaurus to me, but whatever. And then a rainbow and some other cats jumping around trying to get a butterfly. It's not magic art, but you could use it as a token in replacement for a dragon creature if you wanted to. And there's some stuff that has been made into cards, like Rosethorn Acolyte, Tomic, there's a few in there. So he's got a fairly varied art style, which is a bit different, I think, to some of the other illustrators. Some of it looks kind of very magic-y and very sort of traditional. He's got some stuff that looks very Studio Ghibli-esque, and then he's got some other stuff that looks very sort of not necessarily magical, but very traditional, like that you might see on a, I don't know, that you might see framed in an old person's house. how best to describe. Some of it looks really cartoony. Some of it looks very similar to other art in magic. Some of it looks meme-y, and some of it looks very like traditional art. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a fair few bits. There's a fair few prints that he seems to be offering. That you can select from. So, I don't know, scrolling, I don't know, maybe like
there's hundreds of them.
20,
yeah.
20 or something. And if you hit, well, if the campaign hits certain targets, then everybody gets a free token,
yeah,
a sparkly token. That is Johannes Voss, 2019 Magic the Gathering print collection. It's coming from Germany, so no horrible tax for shipping from America.
My last one is the third game in the Mint series, following Mintworks, which you own.
Yep.
Mint Delivery. I don't know if you backed that. Did you back that?
No, I missed it completely. No.
This one is Mint Cooperative,
mm-hmm.
which is, unsurprisingly, a cooperative game.
Yep.
Again, it's fitting in a small mint tin like the previous two games. Just reading the blurb on the Kickstarter page, the first one has sold over 30,000 copies and it's still being reprinted.
Mm.
Mint Delivery was a huge Kickstarter success, funding in an hour, raising almost $200,000. In Mint Delivery, they have continued the overarching nature of Mort from the first game. Mort has had a lot of success with his mint making company, and has branched out and provided mints to more than just the local neighbourhoods. Now, villains from the Dominion of Halitosis have begun lurking, and the Mint Cooperative has come to protect the citizens of Mintopia from the threat of periodontal peril.
Blimey.
So there you go.
That's a mouthful, and I'm not... It wasn't intended as a pun, but I realise you probably could take it as one.
So this game's designed by Jonathan Gilmore, who made Dinosaur Island, Dead of Winter, Wasteland Express.
Yep.
I think he did Fort Wars as well. I'm just going to check that. Yep, Jonathan Gilmore. So that's two games that he's designed that I own, at least. Designed by Jonathan Gilmore and Brian Lewis, who did Dinosaur Island and Dinosaur Island Totally Liquid, and developed by Justin Blask with Mintworks and Mint Delivery, and Mel Primus, who did Penny Lane. It's a refreshingly light cooperative game for 1 to 4 players with easy-to-learn rules and exciting strategic gameplay, played in about 15 to 30 minutes. And as I say, sits in a small mint tin, so it's easily carried around with you.
Yep.
You get lots of little mint tokens again.
Mm-hmm.
You get some red mint tokens.
Ooh.
And little meeples. And lots of cards.
Of course.
And things like that.
Tiny dinky cards.
Yeah.
Yes. Mint, they are a very good tiny game.
Yeah.
Because I remember playing it on my, playing Mintworks on my own. When I had to go into hospital for a sleep study. So they're very small, they're very lightweight, and you can stick them pretty much anywhere. Cool.
It's very cheap as well, £8.
Yeah.
That doesn't include shipping, but I can't imagine it's going to be a very expensive thing to ship a small like that. So £8 for the periodontal protector pledge level. £16 for Dental Defender, where you get two copies of the game. Or £80 for 10 copies of the game as a maxillary magnate. I don't know what maxillary means. Is that another dentistry term that I'm not familiar
with? Isn't
it
one of the bones in your jaw?
Maxillary.
Yeah. I'm envisaging Bones, the character from Bones, saying the word maxillary. So to me, that suggests that maybe
the maxilla is a paired bone that has a body and four processes. Upper jawbone.
There we go.
Yep.
I was right.
The two maxillary bones are fused in the midline. Okay, so the maxillary is the two, I guess. There you go.
It's a bone somewhere in your face that makes up your mouth.
Yeah. That's basically it.
Yeah. But I can hear it in what's-her-face Deschanel's voice.
Yeah. Emily.
Yes, Emily. I can only ever remember Zooey because it's so silly.
I thought it was pronounced Zoe.
I don't know.
Although it's spelt with two O's.
I don't know. I've always said Zooey, which is probably wrong.
Could be.
But
who
it's
knows?
Spelt Zoo, E-Y.
Yeah.
So
that's Kickstarter Corner. So now we come on to a chatette with both Peter Hazelwood and James Emerson. So in these interviews, which was at the Great Indoors last weekend, Pete, as I said earlier, talks about the Board Game Hub, his experience being a first-time game publisher, publishing James's game Tranquility, what it's been like working through that whole process. Then we chat to James about the game, how he's found working with Pete.
Did it sound a bit too scripted though?
Because I interviewed them separately.
Okay.
So they weren't speaking
to each
other.
They weren't conferring.
No. And anyway, we know Pete. He's lovely. Can't imagine he'd be difficult to work with. And so I'll just explain Tranquility a little bit before we get started. So imagine you've got a giant grid, 64 spaces.
Yep.
And there's a number of cards. I think it's I can't remember how it goes. What the top number is. But there's more than 64 cards in the deck. And they all get distributed out to the players. And basically, it's a cooperative game, but you're not allowed to talk to each other. But you have to play the cards, starting with the lowest number in the bottom left corner and the highest number in the top right corner. It doesn't necessarily have to be the highest card and the number one card in the bottom.
Yeah.
But if someone plays like a number four in the bottom left, then that means the one, two, and three can't then be played. At the start of the game, people are just putting cards in positions that they think they should go, and they can't be moved once you put one down. But then if you have to put a card next to another, then you have to discard cards from your hand based on the difference between those two cards. So if you were to put there's an interesting dynamic of, one, where do you put the numbers that you've got? Because if you've got like a really low number, then obviously you'll put it down towards the start of the grid and a really high number towards the end. But the ones in the middle, you know, as the board fills up, you have to be, well, that one's like six or seven different, so I'll put that three spaces before. But then if no one's got the cards that go in between, then you can't win.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that. But then you've also got the, well, that's great, but I can then play this card, but then I need to discard cards to be able to play it.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's really good. I'm doing an absolutely horrible job of explaining it. When it's on Kickstarter, the video will make a lot more sense. Okay. Don't look at me like that.
Well, I was going to say, does James describe it better in his interview?
I can't remember.
Okay.
So let's go and listen to the interviews right now.
Yeah.
So, Pete, thanks for joining us on our fourth anniversary show.
I know. Yeah. I was just thinking 4 years is pretty good. And we'll see about a fifth. But yeah, it was great. Yeah.
I've known you nearly. It was probably within our first year that we first met at the when the Bromsgrove Board Gamers had decamped to university campus.
Right, was that when we got in touch because through mutual friend Aaron?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. And you're obviously still at the uni slogging away, but I've run away.
You have. But you've come back to the area for the weekend because you are once again hosting the Great Indoors this weekend.
Yes, indeed. People are, you know, asking me before and after whether I'd be taking the Great Indoors with me. We've moved away to Wiltshire for Emma's work. And I said, absolutely not. I intended for the Great Indoors to be an annual Worcestershire event. Good. So, I mean, it would be great if I were still local.
Yeah.
Make some things easier. But, you know, it's a Worcestershire event. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily rule out doing additional events elsewhere. But, yeah, it's great to still have a regular thing in Worcestershire because there doesn't seem all that many still running.
So I noticed that you've got your own retail presence here this year, mate.
Yes, indeed. So, yes, as you've probably mentioned before, I've stopped being a full-time dad now for Florence. She's gone off to nursery sort of 30 hours now.
Yep.
And so the last few months I've been wearing two hats, stay-at-home dad and working on really building up this business that Tobias and I set up a couple of years ago. Didn't really get going on it. I decided probably, 9 months, 12 months ago, time to make or break, really. You know, the company's formed, we need to get going on it.
Yeah.
So Tobias is a very busy man, so it's just me now. So Board Game Hub exists on a certain level, and we're trying to set up a retailer online to promote the work of independent and small publishers.
Yeah.
And that was always the aim. And so far it's slow progress, but we've got to build the brand. People have got to become aware of us. We'll be doing some conventions and stuff which should help. So you should be seeing the Board Game Hub logo at places like Aircon and Expo and big conventions like that. So that'll help grow our presence. But it also occurred to me, hand in hand with that goes publishing. You know, why wouldn't we do also our own small bit of publishing? So, as you have seen, we are here demoing for the first time in public Tranquility, mm-hmm. first game by designer James Emerson, and it's a lovely cooperative card game. So it's been it's been great fun. I have to say that the publishing so far has been what I've really got on with.
Okay.
It's been, I'm a creative person, so helping, I didn't design the game, but helping to make something is really been very satisfying.
Yeah.
And so obviously I'm learning on the job. I've not published before, so I've spoken to lots of really useful people, people like Caesar at Alley Cat Games, Kevin Young at they did Legends Untold, lots of really great people who have done their publishing and they're helping to advise. So yeah, we're here demoing Tranquility and building up towards that Kickstarter start in November.
How did you come across Tranquility then?
Well, so thanks to the wonderful Richard Denning of UK Games Expo and Minjuicer Games, I somehow wangled an invite to his, to the Expo's speed dating evening for publishers and designers. That's basically 21 designers in a room, and they've got 4 minutes to pitch their game to every single publisher, and you go around each table and you hear these 21 pitches.
So by the end, those guys have done it.
Yeah, they've done it a lot of times, and we're starting to go cross-eyed trying to... So it's funny, because you get sent all the sell sheets and the rule books stuff for all of these games ahead of time. So there's a long list, and you all the publishers say which ones they're most interested in, and then you get to see the final sort of 20, 21, whatever it was. So I was aware of what it was originally called Hush. So back then, I was aware of it. I looked at the sell sheet. And honestly, I wasn't. It wasn't one of the ones I was most looking forward mm-hmm. to. On paper, it sounded a little dull. Is too strong, but it didn't. It didn't stand out.
Yeah.
And that just shows the value of actually sitting down, seeing it, doing a little demo.
Yeah.
It clicked straight away, and it was the one I was most excited about. After all, all of these pitches, and there were a lot of good games, and some big publishers in there. So I just James was there. He did his pitch, and I thought, this is really quite good. So yeah, just went from there. It was the Tranquility thing came out of when we got Tristram to do the artwork. I gave him some parameters to work with. I wanted them to be reflections. So like traditional cards are the same image up and down, the Tranquility artwork is not quite the same. You've got a night and a day, but they blend into each other. So you've got these lovely two-part square cards. So we suddenly thought, Well, actually, it was James. He said, "I'm not sure Hush fits anymore. We need, you know, we've suddenly come across this sort of island boat theme."
Yeah.
And we realised that, so we thought, right, well, let's apply that theme to the rest of the game. So, you know, the expansions, we've now got sea monsters and yeah. jagged rocks and storms and stuff like that to fit in with this sort of seafaring abstract game. But, yeah. It's,
yeah. Okay. How does James feel like working with someone who's never published again?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, there are perks and there are good sides for him and there are downsides.
Yeah.
I mean, we're basically in the boat together because yeah. he's a first-time publisher. Yeah, oh dear, hey. Didn't even mean that. Yeah, well, that was, you know, that was a con for him,
yeah.
and it, of course it would be, and I was not in denial about this. You know, I was up front and I said, well, so these are the things you'll probably get from me compared to other people. I'm only working on this project.
Yeah.
You've got my full attention. It's not going to get sent over to one of the big publishers and then get lost in a tray. You know, we're going to actively work on it. He's heavily involved in all the processes. So yeah. we chat a lot on the phone or on WhatsApp. You know, I'll send him, some artwork and he'll give me feedback on it straight away. So, yeah, I mean, you'd have to ask him how he feels the whole process has been.
Yeah.
But it's been really interesting for me. And it sounds very like a politician, but he's been a joy to work with.
I'm sure he has. Okay, so have you had any more contact with anyone else? Have you thought about what you're going to do after this?
It's a good question. I am keeping an eye on a design from David Digby, who hasn't had a publication under his own name yet. But he is a very, I think you've got to say, a talented designer. But he has worked on designs.
Okay.
So, for instance, he's done solo modes for published games.
He's
written rule sets for games.
Yeah.
He's just not been the big name on the box yet. Again, at the expo, I had a look at a few of his prototypes, and he had this amazing... I don't use that word lightly. I think a potentially really strong game about running a theatre company.
Okay.
I wouldn't say too much more,
partially
because my memories are somewhat vague after 3 or 4 months. It seemed to really... It's got something to it.
Okay.
So I'm keeping my eye out on this one. This could be a possibility. And, of course, James has turned up this weekend with 2 more prototypes to show me.
Okay.
And they've both got promise, and they're all really different. He's one of these interesting designers who's designing different styles of games.
That's good.
He's not going to be... And, you know, you get those sort of 2 different kinds of designers, don't you? You have a designer who... all their games have certain hallmarks.
Yeah, they're variations on the theme.
Absolutely. And then you've got games... And the only one I can particularly think of straight away is Vlad Fartl. And he just does... From Mage Knight to Codenames.
Yeah.
You know, the gap is astronomical.
Yeah.
I hated Mage Knight, but people like it. So it's, you know...
played it.
I wouldn't recommend it, but lots of people do.
Yeah.
But the point is that some designers are capable of designing these wildly different different games. So that seems to be not on purpose, but yeah.
Okay, the crowdfunding for Tranquility, then. What's the plans?
So it's due to launch midnight... I never know whether it's midnight on the 1st of November or the 2nd of November. It's when the 1st of November becomes the 2nd of November.
So that's midnight on the 2nd, I think?
I don't know.
I think so.
0000 crossing over from the 1st to the 2nd of November.
Yeah. Okay.
And it'll be a 30-day campaign. And we just had the prototypes arrive yesterday.
Cool.
So that's what James is demoing with. You know, we've got all this lovely, properly seeing the artwork for the first time. And it really is a stunning game to look at. So I've just managed to send off a couple straight away to reviewers that we've got lined up. So there'll be a few previews coming out in the next sort of month and a half. News will probably be a bit quiet because we'll just be quietly, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's, making sure that everything works properly. Getting ready to launch the campaign, early November.
Sweet. So that's coming to Kickstarter. If people want to find out more about Board Game Hub, is it just boardgamehub.co.uk?
That's correct, yes. Yeah. You can also find us on Facebook. You're not going to have to work very hard to find us, but it's boardgamehub.co.uk.
Cool. And also, if people want to keep their eyes open for details of the next Great Indoors event, that's great-indoors.co.uk.
That is also correct, yes.
I've got a good memory.
And very, very good. And I will posit that with a slight trepidation.
Yeah.
I hope to carry on running the Great Indoors. I'm having to wear many hats at this point.
Yes.
I'm trying to run a retail business and a publishing business and trying to run an annual event. And I've only got so many hours. So, yeah, we'll see how this goes. Watch this space. But, I would be loath to lose the Great Indoors.
Maybe you are the next Richard Denning.
Yes, he is extremely capable. I've no idea how that man gets the things done. And he also writes, doesn't he?
Yes, he's an author as well. It's
so
crazy.
Yes, let's not put the next and Richard Denning in front of my name.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me, mate. And
thank you
for those people who don't know where we are, we're currently sitting in my car outside of the pub where the event has been held.
It smells delicious. What's that?
Oh, it's California Scents, cherry flavoured. It's lovely.
Delicious.
Okay, mate, well, thank you for inviting me to the event again. It's been a pleasure to come.
No, it's our pleasure, and I'm sorry Ray wasn't well, but hopefully see her soon.
So, at the Great Indoors again, and I'm joined by James Emerson, the aforementioned designer of Tranquility that Peter's just told us all about. Nice to meet you, mate.
Nice to meet you.
The first time we have someone on our show, we always ask them what their gaming background was. So, what sort of games did you grow up playing, or did you grow up playing games?
Growing up, we played quite a lot of games as a family. Uno, I was fortunate that we found an old copy of Escape from Atlantis.
Oh, yeah.
Had a car boot, and we played an awful lot of that when I was a kid, not realising just how brilliant that game is. But I didn't really find hobby games until I was at university, second year, so I'd be 19, so about 7 years ago. And I came in a very conventional route with Dominion, followed immediately by Catan, followed by Avalon, and had an absolute blast. And then bought far more games than I should probably own.
Yeah,
like many of us.
Yeah, I've been in hobby since just before I started podcasting, so 4.5 years, and I've got too many games to play. It's crazy, isn't it? Okay, so what made you think, I'd be good at making my own game?
It almost happened by accident, I guess. I think when you play so many games, you start thinking, oh, this would be good. This is a good idea. But I was just messing around with a game that I already owned and looking at different games that I could play with that deck of cards. And I came across a solo game that I quite liked, but it was too easy, so I started making some changes, and then I made some bigger changes, and within about an hour and a half I was thinking, actually, this is pretty good. And then I thought, well, this doesn't have to just be solo, I can split this deck and turn it into a co-op, and we were 90% of the way there, and then it was just tweaking and playing with groups and a bit of blind testing and things, and before you know it, you've got a game on your hands.
Oh, yeah. So Pete's mentioned to us that he came across you at the sort of speed dating event at the expo. How did you get involved in that? Did you just, like, answer a call for designers?
So UK Games Expo every year, as far as I can tell, run, it's almost like a competition. You submit a sell sheet and a copy of the rules, and they go off to a load of publishers who then shortlist the ones that they really want to see. I think there's quite a lot of entries. There was about 12, 14 of us who made it through to pitch to the publishers. I got a little bit of interest from different players, but Peter's the one I went with. He's picked it up, and I definitely made the right choice.
So it's interesting because obviously this is Pete's first project. I'm sure you got a lot of interest from people who had experience publishing games.
Yeah, so I got interest from some very big players originally. WizKids took a copy to America. Cosmos took a copy to Germany. But what you find is these people often take longer to respond because they've got so many games waiting to go. And Peter was there within sort of like 2 days going, I like this, pal, let's get moving. And I was thinking, yeah, well, I could be waiting indefinitely. And if I'm in honest with some of the other people, not mentioning any names, but some of the other publishers who took it still haven't got back to me as to whether or not they're interested yet. Because I had sort of like 4 or 5 publishers, you know, take a look. And I was really keen to get it moving. You know, for me personally, it was just getting out there on the market. You know, it's that's most of the satisfaction is to see, you know, something that I've created out there.
Yeah.
And Peter was really, really enthusiastic, and I thought, it's my first design, it's your first publishing game, it just felt like the right match.
Let's do this journey together.
And I don't regret it. He's a great guy, and from a designer point of view, he's kept me very much in the process from beginning right the way through. Every decision that he makes, he tells me this is what he's doing. If he feels like he needs to ask me or inform me, I'm thinking about doing this. Are you happy with this direction that I'm taking? Are you sure that's okay? Yeah, I felt really well looked after.
Cool. I'm always interested in speaking to designers, especially after they've gone through all the playtesting phase, to see like how many changes you had to make because of what you've observed other people doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a good question. And I find that one of the most difficult parts, because I've got a couple of games on the go at the minute, and I've got 90% of the game, I feel. And then it's that last little tweaking, and you get to a point where you're like, is it better with this? Or is it better removed? Is it better with, you know, and you've got to try it several times before you kind of make a decision on one side of the fence or the other, yeah, as to which way this tiny little variant is going to make the game as a whole,
yeah,
a better option. I made a lot of little tweaks after I'd kind of got that solid basis to go from, and ideas came from the most unusual places. My mum, bless her, whose board game experience isn't massive, but I had only half the border cards out, and she, yeah, said, well, why don't you just have them all the way around? It would make things so much easier. And I was like, this is pure simple genius. Why, yeah, haven't I thought of this already? You know, and yeah, so it helps to play with a whole variety of people, not just gamers who, yeah, know what they're talking about. You know, people can have a completely different look on it and bring something to the table that you just not thought, yeah, of, yeah, that adds to the whole package.
I guess you have to not be too precious as well on things. There might be something that you think is the bee's knees, but then after you've seen a few people play it and they don't get on with it.
Yes, I think you've got to be responsive to the people who are playing. I mean, there's some things where people said, oh, have you tried this? And I'm, in my head, I'm thinking, that's just not going to work. Mm. I can see that playing out, and mathematically or from a gameplay point of view, it's just going to be confusing or impossible or whatever. But often somebody will have an idea and I'll think, yeah, let's try it and see where it goes. And, you know, half the time you say, no, actually, it's not working. Let's, yeah, just go back to where we were. Let's start from ground up again. But sometimes, yeah, it works. I think there's a certain amount you can kind of play through inside of your head, and then there's a point where you have to say, okay, I need to have a look at this on the table with other people, yeah, and see how it plays. And it's just once you get to that point, you think, yeah, we need to try this idea for me to know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, Tranquility is coming to Kickstarter in November. If people want to find out more about the game before then it's just, is it Tranquility Game on Facebook?
It's, yeah, Tranquility, the cooperative card game, I think it is, yeah, on Facebook. We've got a Board Game Geek entry, which is hopefully going to get a little bit more information as the weeks progress, yeah, and then 1st of November we're hitting Kickstarter.
Okay.
I'm very excited.
Cool. Well, we wish you the best of luck, mate.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully we'll speak to you after the campaign has successfully funded.
So there we go. Thanks, guys, for chatting to me in my car, because it was the only quiet space we could get.
Yeah.
So that is our 4th anniversary episode, all done. So everyone should know how to get in contact with us. Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. We are TogCast, TogCast.
To listen to us, other than the fact that you already are listening to us,
yeah.
You can go to soundcloud.com/offlinegamer or search for The Offline Gamer on your podcast platform of choice.
You can see all of our YouTube videos and everything that we do at offlinegamer.co.uk.
And if you'd like to email us, you can do at offlinegamerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can use the contact form on our website.
It's that time of the year again where we just say thank you to everyone who's still listening or, yep, has recently started listening. Everyone we've interviewed over the years, everyone who's given us support, everyone we've met on our tabletop journey.
Yep.
It's been fun. We've made lots of new friends and we hope to continue doing so in the future. On that note, we'll see you hopefully next month for our first episode of year five.
Mm.
So thanks very much, everyone, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.